2. Centuries earlier, in medieval England, it was movie night for the wizards, which was just as confusing as it sounds. The wizards were all time travelers, and for many years they had held to an unwritten rule to not speak too much about their own times. Any two of them could be from times that were up to 3 decades apart. It was thought that discussion of the changes in society, social mores, and the quality of the various casts of Saturday Night Live would only lead to unnecessary conflict. In fact, the wizards from the mid-1990s or later refused to discuss any movies at all for fear of letting slip any details of the Star Wars prequels or the 4th Indiana Jones movie, a group of works that the later wizards would only refer to by the collective title The Unpleasantness. Later, of course, attitudes grew more lax. Wizards from earlier times wanted to play with more advanced hardware, and wizards from later times wanted to see the looks on their faces when they did. So the system slowly broke down. Eventually, the wizards started sharing information freely, even arranging a film festival, during which all 3 Star Wars prequels and the 4th Indiana Jones movie were all screened back to back, in the name of getting it over with. Since then, the Wizards of Leadchurch had settled into a nice routine, holding a weekly movie night, taking turns subjecting each other to a double feature of their favorite films, mostly science fiction, and their favorite food, mostly pizza. It was Philip's turn to host the party, and the guests were having difficulty processing his first selection. As the credits rolled, Philip stopped his massive Betamax machine and hit rewind.
Well, that's Colossus, the Forbin Project. What do you think?
He asked his friends, who were scattered comfortably around his rec room, their wizard robes unbuttoned to show the t-shirts, jeans, and sneakers they always wore underneath. Except for Roy, who was of a different generation. He wore slacks, loafers, and a short-sleeve button-down shirt. But then again, he also wore a trench coat instead of a robe, and he had the only wizard hat with a fedora brim. His staff was what billiards players refer to as a bridge. Martin stood up from the chrome and leather couch he had been sharing with Tyler and Jeff. He stretched his back and groaned.
I don't know. It was interesting, but I want to see the sequel before I pass judgment.
Philip smiled.
There was no sequel.
Gary, who was slowly unfolding himself after 2 hours of sitting cross-legged on the floor, asked,
What do you mean, no sequel? Didn't it do well enough to get a second movie made?
Roy shook his head. He was the oldest man in the room in terms of physical age, because he was in his early 50s, and because he was from the year 1973. He also was an aerospace engineer by training and exuded a demeanor of terse, dependable authority.
See, kids, back in Phil's in my day, if you made a good movie, you took that success and made a different movie, not the same movie over again.
Philip was the second oldest man in the room. He was in his early 40s, from the mid-1980s, and exuded an air of foppish, fallible authority. He smiled broadly and said,
Actually, that was your day. In my day, they had started doing the endless sequel thing. This movie was from before, and I don't think there was ever any plan for a sequel.
But it ended with a cliffhanger, Tyler said.
No, it didn't. Philip explained. That was the end of the story.
But, Tyler sputtered, the supercomputer, what'd you call it, Colossus, had completely taken over the world.
Yes,
Philip agreed.
What kind of movie is that?
Tyler asked, indignant. Philip chuckled.
A 70s movie. The central message of science fiction was that we were all doomed.
Jeff snorted.
The message of all the 70s was that we were all doomed.
Jeff was from a time later in the future than anyone else in the room, but he and Roy had hit it off, and Roy had taken Jeff on a field trip to the early 1970s. Jeff returned badly shaken and refused to even discuss going back.
Indeed,
Philip said.
And people paid to see these movies?
Jeff asked.
Philip said, "Yeah, all the time. That was one of the first films my dad ever took me to see. It's why I went into computer sciences when I grew up."
"So you could prevent computers from taking over?" Martin asked.
"That, or be on the winning side when they did," Philip answered.
Tyler stood up and picked up his staff from the floor. He asked,
"Well, is the next movie going to be more positive?"
Philip said,
"We'll see."
He smiled broadly, which meant that the answer was almost certainly no. Tyler groaned and said,
"I'm going to go to the bathroom."
Then he teleported away. One of the chief advantages of no-cost teleportation was that you never had to use a strange bathroom again. Martin muttered something about getting some fresh air and stepped outside. The bottom floor of Philip's shop was where he read his crystal ball, made fake potions, and in general acted wizardly. The top floor was a chrome and plastic salute to bachelorhood in the mid-1980s, right down to the white Pontiac Fiero that was displayed like a coveted piece of art. In front of the Fiero, there were two large doors that led to a deck that could also serve as a bridge for the Fiero to drive onto the hill behind the shop. Martin stepped out onto the deck, and suddenly he was back in the year 1153. Wood buildings with thatched roofs rested in darkness beneath a sky unspoiled by artificial light. Martin was a typical young man from the year 2012, and couldn't have looked more out of place. The only nod to his surroundings was his wizard robe, but it was covered with silver sequins and did not help. He took a lungful of the clean, cool air. Predictably, after a moment, Philip joined him. They stood in silence for a moment. Then Philip said,
"It's a shame Gwen couldn't come tonight."
"It is," Martin agreed.
"I'm glad you're here, though," Philip added.
Martin said,
"Thanks."
Philip looked at Martin and asked,
"Why couldn't Gwen make it?"
Martin said,
"Because she knew I was going to be here."
"Ah."
A long silence passed in which Philip tried to think of what to say, and Martin hoped intensely that Philip wouldn't say anything. Instead, Philip asked,
"How long have you two been dating now?"
3 years, Martin answered.
"Yeah,"
Philip said.
"I guess it has been. Ever since Atlantis, right?"
"Yep," Martin answered.
"Have you considered maybe moving your relationship to the next level?"
Philip asked.
"Yes, I have."
"And have you discussed it?"
"Yes, with you. Several times."
"How about with Gwen?"
Martin said.
"Yes."
"I see,"
Philip said.
"And have you come to an agreement?"
"Yes. We agree that we shouldn't move forward until she feels ready."
"Ah,"
Philip said, nodding. A silent moment passed. Then Philip said,
"It'll work out, Martin."
"You're sure of that?"
"Oh, yeah,"
Philip said.
"I mean, there are only three ways this can play out. Either she'll come around, you'll decide you're fine with the situation as it is, or the two of you will break up. Any of those qualify as it having worked out."
"That's not very reassuring," Martin said.
"I don't know. Looks to me like a 2 out of 3 chance of being happy. Those aren't bad odds."
Martin asked,
"How are things with you and Britt?"
Philip answered,
"Great, things are really going well."
"Why isn't she here?"
Philip smiled.
"She never comes to these things, Martin, you know that. She thinks it's important that we both have friends and interests outside of our relationship."
"But you two are solid?"
Martin pressed further.
"Yeah,"
Philip said.
"She seems happy. I know I am."
Martin said,
"Good. I'm happy for you."
Philip could hear genuine emotion in Martin's voice as he said it. Philip was a bit amused that the emotion didn't sound like happiness. Philip went back inside. Martin followed. Tyler had returned, and he, Jeff, and Gary were now completely filling the couch. Roy sat in one of the two easy chairs, and since it was Philip's place, that meant that Martin had lost the game of musical chairs. He chose to stand at the periphery of the seating area until the next movie began. He didn't mind sitting on the floor, but that didn't mean he was in a hurry to start. Tyler dug a pen and a notepad out of his pocket and quickly scribbled something down.
"What you writing?"
Jeff asked.
Nothing.
Tyler stammered, cheating the notepad away from Jeff.
"Just an idea."
"What is it? Another fantasy novel?"
Jeff asked.
"No,"
Tyler said.
"I'm thinking of getting away from fantasy for a while. It's just an idea that occurred to me. It's probably nothing."
"Come on,"
Jeff pressed him.
"What is it?"
Tyler shook his head.
"I'd really rather not say, at least until I've had more time to flesh the idea out."
Jeff said,
"That's okay. You don't have to tell us your idea. Martin will."
Tyler looked away from Jeff and saw that Martin had crept up beside him and read the note over his shoulder. Tyler snapped the notebook shut, but it was too late. Martin said, "He wrote, inspiring tale of a rock star who loses his hearing. Title?
I can't hear you."
Jeff said,
"Hey, that's not bad."
"Yeah," Gary agreed. "I've seen movies with worse stories. Just tonight, in fact."
Philip pressed a button on the front of the surprisingly large VCR that was attached to his surprisingly small television. A metal and plastic cradle rose smoothly out of the top of the machine on complex and fragile-looking scissor-action arms. Philip removed one rattling black plastic tape from the cradle and slid another into its place, before firmly pressing the cradle back into the top of the machine with a loud mechanical click. Philip turned to face the group, rubbing his hands together in anticipation.
"Okay," he said. "Who's ready for the next movie?"
Tyler asked,
"Does this one have a happy ending?"
Philip shrugged theatrically.
"Depends what you mean by a happy ending."
Gary asked,
"Do the good guys win?"
"That depends on what you mean by winning."
Jeff said,
"Getting what they want."
Philip thought for a moment, then said,
"Ah, then no. The good guys don't win."
The three wizards on the couch groaned. Philip said,
"Look, it's a science fiction movie that was huge in its day, but I suspect you haven't seen it. It can't have aged very well. The ending is one of the most shocking things you'll ever see in your life, though."
That got their attention, particularly Gary's.
"Okay," Gary asked. "What's it called?"
Philip said,
"Planet of the Apes."
The three on the couch exploded in an even louder chorus of groans.
"What?"
Philip asked.
"You've heard of it?"
"Yeah," Martin said. "They remade it a couple of times now."
Jeff said,
"Actually, first they reimagined it, then they rebooted it."
Roy scowled and asked,
"Jeez. Doesn't anybody in the future have any ideas of their own?"
Martin said,
"We have plenty of ideas. It's just that most of them involve stuff that already exists."
"But why not make something new?"
Roy asked. Martin answered,
"I think they'd rather make money."
Philip said,
"Okay, okay, fine. You don't want to watch The Planet of the Apes? That's not a problem. I have another movie here that I know you haven't seen. It's called The Wicker Man."
Martin sighed and looked to Jeff, who was from a time after Martin's and would be aware of the remake. Martin and Jeff had barely made eye contact when Jeff, Tyler, and Gary all disappeared.
"Huh," Martin said. "I know the remake wasn't that good, but just taking off seems like an overreaction."
He turned to look at Philip and found him gone as well.
"What the hell just happened?"
Roy asked, rising from his seat. Martin said,
"They disappeared."
Roy said,
"Well, I knew that."
"Then why'd you ask?"
Martin replied.